Ad-Free Shows fans, what is going on? This is an adfreeshows.com special event. We're chatting one-on-one with Chris Adonis, the former Chris Masters, the current NWA Heavyweight National Champion. I mean, you are looking good, my friend. That is a beautiful belt. How are you today, man?
Thank you. I'm fine. Actually, it's a polarizing belt. I've heard some people love it, some people hate it, but I'm doing quite fine, man. It's a little cold here in Texas, but it's a great day to be alive.
No, I love the red strap. I think the red strap's cool. It's different. There's nothing wrong with being different in wrestling, especially when there's so much, people are always trying to copy one another. So standing out is never a bad thing as far as I'm concerned. But how have things been treating you, man? You said you're down in Texas, new year, new you. We hear all that. You just turned 39 years old. Happy birthday to you, my friend. How's life treating you?
Good. You know, things have, it's been obviously a challenging year, a couple of years for everybody with the pandemic. But as I've kind of said on my social media and stuff, I just feel like for me personally, it started out real tough, but then, you know, you could either make this thing work for you or against you. And I just did a lot of things, a lot of personal growth over the last year, a lot of things that I hadn't done in the past. Like, you know, they talked on the Something to Wrestle about how I broke into pro wrestling so early. You know, I never got a chance to finish high school. So I really made it a goal of mine, just not for the sake of anything outside of just having an education, just knowing history and knowing what happened in the past, knowing basic, you know, my writing, improving my writing, all those little skills that I kind of didn't acquire just because I was so dead set on going into professional wrestling once I decided to. So, you know, I focused on that. And obviously professional wrestling is kind of really been going well as of late. You know, NWA has just been such a great platform for me to kind of showcase who I am at this point, which I feel is, you know, I feel like a completely different guy. And I feel like I've matured very much as a performer. And I feel like, you know, it's just, I broke in so early. And I'm just at a point now where, you know, it takes a long time unless you're Kurt Angle to kind of master the art and psychology of professional wrestling. But I just feel like, you know, now there's a comfort with who I am as a performer and who I am as a character. And a lot of that is shining through on that NWA power every week. So I'm very grateful to William Corgan and my NWA family and everything we've been able to do.
That's awesome, man. It sounds like you're in a really great place, and mentally, physically, you look great. That's really awesome to hear. And I know a lot of our Ad-Free Shows fans were already asking about that. But man, that's the one thing that stands out to me. Like, I had to sit back, and when I was listening to this episode of Something to Wrestle, I was like, wow, he really was just 20 years old in front of all these millions of people. And the pressure that comes with it is absolutely immense. So we're going to dive into that in this conversation here. But the very first thing that struck me in the episode was, Bruce said that you're a big fan of Something to Wrestle and that you've been listening to it for a while. When did you discover the podcast, and what hooks you about it?
Well, you know what? That is another part of the last couple of years. You know, I just grown such a love for listening. Like Conrad, for instance, like Conrad feels like my wrestling buddy that I grew up with. We're like literally a year apart in age. And it's funny because, you know, we'll debate certain things. We'll debate the Iron Man match about whether it was, you know, I think it's one of the greatest main events ever. He obviously thinks what he thinks. And it's fun. And, you know, like, it's just fun to, and, you know, we both love 1997. I mean, that's just such a, as a fan, that's a year of such interest for us. So I just, you know, that was just another part of the journey of the last couple of years. I told Conrad this, I felt like, you know, Conrad and Bruce just listening to the podcast, reliving all these old pay-per-views and all these, all this wrestling from growing up, it really put me in touch with the fan in me once again. And the fan was always there, but you know, when you enter a business and you're in it for a certain amount of time, I mean, it becomes your business and it's different. You know what I mean? You're not that, you know, mark, so to speak, that you were before, but you know, just listening to the podcast, it was, first of all, it was just such a great time passer, man. It was just so entertaining hearing the banter between those guys and reliving all that stuff. But it just really put me in touch with the kid. You know, he posted that picture of me with China wearing the Shawn Michaels shirt and stuff. And it really put me back in touch with that guy. And it actually helped me, I think, with some of the wrestling I'm doing now, because it made me go back to then and think about what was it that I found cool about professional wrestling? Mm-hmm. What was it that I liked? And then it made me start looking at myself and like, hey, well, if I was a fan, what would I want out of me? You know what I mean? And it was a number of things, you know, whether it be, you know, just better promos or or more elaborate entrance gear. Like, that was the type of stuff that really captured me as a fan. So I just kind of looked at my game and I'm like, well, shoot, what is it that I can step my game up on at this point? And so, you know, it really kind of, it all helped me out in the end, really.
That struck me because when I think of your journey, and I, perhaps I was ignorant to this, I didn't realize how much of a fan of the business you were before coming into, because there's a lot of wrestlers who just kind of stumbled their way into wrestling. And especially when you're talking about the Rick Bassman group, there's a lot of muscle guys who don't really care about wrestling, but they see it as a form of entertainment, a way to show off their physique. How were you separate from some of the other guys you may have been training with there in UPW?
Well, first of all, you're right about all that. And, you know, there's a stigma that comes along with that too. And, you know, I don't want to say this in a negative light, because actually now looking back, you know, like the body guys, so to speak, the Lex Lugers and all that, always got typecast, and the Ultimate Warrior is kind of, they breeded this kind of thing where, you know, it was these muscular guys who got opportunities who didn't necessarily weren't wrestling fans that broke in, but had tremendous success. And there was always this bitterness towards that. And I think some of that went on to me, but that was because a lot of people didn't realize, just like what you said, that like, yeah, I appeared like one of those guys. I was a bodybuilder and I really worked on that aspect after first entering UPW. But, you know, that wasn't the case for me. I lived and breathed professional wrestling. It was my passion. I was a fan my whole life. It was like the only thing I truly loved. And it was very easy once I had to really kind of sit down, you know, when I was about 14 or 15 and start thinking about what I wanted to do in my life. I mean, all fingers pointed to wrestling, because everything about my life was just wrestling, wrestling magazines, pay-per-views, recording the Raws and all that. But what was your original question? I'm sorry.
Did you find it strange that, or was there a weird dichotomy where you are a real fan per se at this time, and some of the guys around you training maybe aren't necessarily as familiar with the business? Did that present any challenges for you?
That may have been the case a little bit in UPW, for instance, because, you know, there were, you know, Rick would acquire a lot of big guys out in California and who fit the look, and they would start training, and they may have only casually watched it. So there was some of that there. But I mean, you fast forward, and I know you weren't referencing OVW, but once I got to OVW, there were like a lot of the people there were all lifelong fans, you know, more over half of them. So I'd say yes, in UPW, there was some of that. You know, I don't know, you know, Cena said he had watched a lot of wrestling growing up. I don't know sure about that, but, you know, anyways, well, who am I to say? But, you know, and there was, you know, we had Andrew Bernarski, you know, there was a lot of like kind of top tier athletes and specimens and stuff like that. But I don't think there was anybody who were like lifelong marks, so to speak.
Sure. We're talking with NWA National Heavyweight Champion Chris Adonis, the former Chris Masters, here on this ad-free show. I love a good pose, man. Seriously. I won't hold that John Cena comment against you. I don't know if John's going to see this or not, so I'm going to hold back on that.
But oh, I'm just messing.
You mentioned OVW. You are forming one half of the Troubleshooters at the time with Brent Albright, the former Gunner Scott. And how did you find yourself standing out from that pairing? Because tag teams typically around that time were coming up together and then they were being recycled in and out. So how did you find a way to stand out and get that call up at around 20 years old?
All right. Let me figure out a way to say this without sounding cocky about it. Okay. So in OVW, things were like a little, you know, Jim Cornette liked to run his TVs in a fashion where he wanted to use talent that he knew that he would have around. So, you know, when I teamed with Brent, a lot of the emphasis actually went on Brent. I kind of wondered if it was maybe Jim Cornette didn't see talent in me or whatever. But what I ultimately realized was, oh, Jim Cornette felt more confident about the fact that Brent Albright was going to be sticking around in OVW for a while. And he kind of saw the writing on the wall with me as far as they were going to help develop me, but I was going to be on the road fairly quickly. So, like, all indications kind of pointed to that. And, you know, Brent was great, you know, he moved really well in the ring. He had a lot of good qualities as far as the in-ring aspects. But I mean, honestly, we called him Not Quite in OVW. And the Not Quite was because everything else was just not quite. You know, he didn't really have a personality that stood out or kind of any of the other stuff. You know, pro wrestling always seems like, you know, you don't necessarily have to check every box to get in, but you got to have something that really stands out. At least one thing, whether it be your look or a promo or something like that. And, you know, Brent's in-ring work, again, was very fluent and he was very smooth and good in there. But you know, as you know, with WWE, it's an entertainment company, and that's just not enough, especially when it comes to a boss like Vince McMahon. So, or it'll only take you so far.
One of the overarching themes of this episode, and it's discussed multiple times across your tenure, is was Chris called up too soon? He's so young. You're still learning the WWE system. And at the end of the episode, Bruce says that, like, if the NXT system was around, you would have flourished and been so much more prepared to handle that spotlight. How did you feel at the time about handling all of that pressure that was being put on you? Because you were thrust into a pretty major situation right away.
Wow. You know, let me think of how I can sum this up for you. You know, it was a dream come true. But yes, it was like a ton of pressure, and it was learning so much. And here's the thing that you learn as you go throughout your career in the business. It's like, you know, and I've had like even like Thomas Latimer, who I team up with in NWA. We talked about this. It's just to think that you would be on Raw at 20 years old and with only about 2 years of training, it almost like blows your mind, because really it takes guys sometimes beyond 5 years. Yeah. To really even understand, to really get a grasp of psychology and how you apply that stuff in a ring, how you get emotionally invested, how you channel real intensity in a line of work like this, that is, you know, a work, so to speak. And like, those are all things that, you know, like, again, there's the Kurt Angles, and there's a few who've really gotten it really quick, but like, that's just not typical. And then you add to it the fact that I'm sharing a locker room with guys that I grew up, like, you know, these all grew up as basically my heroes. You know what I mean? I appreciated everybody. I didn't care if I met the world champ or the guy opening the card. To me, it was all like crazy. And I appreciated all of them, you know what I mean, for what they did. So it was very intimidating on multiple fronts, just because, again, you know, and that's just, we're not even talking about going out to a ring and performing, you know what I mean? So obviously that part, you know, is fun and it's awesome. But yeah, like you said, it's a lot of pressure, and, you know, and then you add everything else, the sharing the locker room with the guys, and, you know, just it's a lot to deal with. And, you know, even when I watch some of these young athletes, you know, in the NBA and stuff like that, I always feel, you know, kind of some kinship to that, in terms of, like, you know, I kind of under, you know, I don't know if it's exactly the same, obviously, with sports, it's a whole different deal, but, you know, to be that at that age and in an atmosphere like that and with the pressure and all that, you know, I really kind of connect with that, because, I mean, that was me essentially, but in a wrestling arena.
Well, one of the talking points that came up too was this fantastic masterpiece character. It was a nice homage to some classic wrestling in the 80s, showing off the physique. But there was a little bit of a point of contention, because Conrad mentioned that it was Matt Morgan, his rumored to be the one that came up with the masterpiece moniker. Now, I was just going to ask you straight up if that's true, but I happen to know Matt Morgan very well, so I texted him and asked him, and I will read him verbatim, quote, "Damn right it is." And I asked him if it was true. He said, "Damn right it is. And he knows I get pissed off when he doesn't give me my props when he tells his stupid story." So is it true?
I always give him props.
So is it true that Matt Morgan did in fact come up with the masterpiece?
Yeah, I can remember the day, you know, so there's a couple things here. I showed up to OVW and Dr. Tom told me one day, all of a sudden, your name is Chris Masters. So I'm like, okay, I guess my name is Chris Masters. You know, I don't know. It was just, what are you going to do? That's my name now, I guess. But, you know, so we're rolling with that for a while. And I just remember, us sitting around somebody's living room, and I'm pretty sure it was like me, Matt Morgan, Johnny Jeter, maybe Mickey James. I don't know. We had a good little group down there. We all used to hang out, and it was real tight knit. It was like college. OVW is like college, man. If you're a professional wrestler, especially me arriving there at 19, my first time away from home, it was college. But I do remember we were sitting around the living room one day, and Matt dropped Masterpiece, and it was like light bulb just went off. You know, It's just, again, you watch wrestling your whole life, you just Masterpiece Chris Masters. It just fits so perfectly, and it was exactly kind of what, you know, I realized fairly quickly in OVW that, like, the perception of me was I was like, you know, I was a body guy. I was one of those, you know, like we said, the Lugers, the Warriors. I was kind of looked at in that elk, or even Rick Rude, I guess, or and Vince specifically. I guess I reminded Vince of Paul Orndorff quite a bit. That was a thing that I came to know very early. So, you know, it just fit perfect, man. And as soon as I loved it, and I brought it to Jim Cornette, and then he loved it. And then he just started calling it Neither the Masterpiece Chris Masters on television, and the rest was history. We rolled with it, and WWE rolled with it.
All right. So we are going
to. So props to Matt Morgan. I always give you props, Matt.
I was going to say, we're going to inflate it.
My mom, you know, it's funny. This is a strong point of contention with my mom. She swears that she came up with it. But like, I always remember this. You know how your mom is. She'll call you all these great names. You know what I mean? She was probably calling me like the most beautiful son in the world. And she thought she meant masterpiece. You know, that's moms.
Well, we'll inflate his ego just a little bit and give it to him. But you end up making your debut, and it's a little bit of a struggle. You go against Stevie Richards in your debut match, and you end up injuring him. And when Bruce was asked about this on the podcast, he said, you know, it was kind of hard to put himself in your shoes because you were the one who was going through the curtain there. But he remembered that created a little bit of an uphill battle for you. What are your recollections of that, and how did you combat that?
Oh, man, I just remember, you know, there's some things that worked out really perfect for me, and there's some things that didn't, and my debut was one of them. Unfortunately, like that day, the day before, I had eaten, and I've told this story a bunch of times, but I had eaten a turkey wrap at a gas station. You know, I'd only been on the road a year. You know, you learn these lessons as you go on. There's so many lessons you learn on the road from the vets and just from experiences like this, just, you know, that, like, at this point, I'm only a year and I was hungry. I got a sandwich at a gas station or something like that, because we're in the middle of nowhere. I ate it. And next thing I know, you know, my stomach was rumbling, didn't think too much of it. Wake up the next morning, I go down to eat breakfast at the hotel, and I take one bite and I'm done. I just can't, even touch it. I try to go tanning with Mike Bucci Nova, who I was with on the road at that point. And I remember I just started throwing up outside the tanning salon. And, you know, I come to find out that afternoon that I had gotten food poisoning. And it was like, it was horrible. I'd never gotten food poisoning ever in my life. You know, Stephanie McMahon kind of joked around with me about it just being nerves. And I was nervous, but I mean, this was obvious illness. I mean, I was laid out on the table all day, and the doctor, well, you know, they eventually started giving me ginger tea, which would give me about 15 minutes of relief. But I literally couldn't hold down a drop of water up until I started getting the tea down. I was just blowing everything up. I mean, it was coming out. We don't even need to go into the details. Yeah. You know what I mean? But anyway, so I had that going against me. And then, you know, they put on social media my entrance from that night. And the funny thing was, so I had food poisoning. And now I just learned that entrance that day. Sean and Hunter worked on that with me. So I'm sick throughout all this, like really sick, but I'm learning the entrance. I'm just hearing the theme that day too. They give me some headphones and I'm listening to this theme song. I remember I listened to like 20, probably 30 times, man, trying to get this whole entrance together all in one afternoon while being sick. So, I mean, just so much was going on that day, man. And, you know, like when I look back at that debut, I mean, I didn't like any, like, I don't even like the entrance. Like, I can't even watch the full entrance when I see it, because I know that, like, nothing was perfected, and it just, I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm very critical of myself. Yeah. I think a lot of performers are, but, and then on top of it, even worse than all that was obviously what ended up happening. And that was, you know, I'd been using the Polish hammer. I'd been, you know, before I debuted, I was on the road for a good half year, maybe even longer, just doing house shows and getting me comfortable being on the road, getting me the experience of working with the guys. And, you know, I was using that Polish hammer, and it came out pretty good on a couple of house shows. And we're all thinking, oh, this is a keeper. And then, you know, that night I used it, and I'll never for the life of me have a good explanation for it. I remember Stevie was firing up on me. And, you know, I turn, he goes to hit the ropes, and I swing like kind of blindly, but, you know, still no excuse, you know, like there's no reason, you know, that needs to be placed kind of right along here. And for whatever reason, man, it just did not. It went right across his face, man. And it was terrible, man. You know, it was definitely not. There's one thing that you don't want to be in this business, and it's a reckless performer, because nobody wants to work with somebody who's reckless with another person's body or potentially going to injure them. So, and I knew that as soon as I injured Stevie, and he was pissed. You know, we finished the match, and I remember I got to the back, and, you know, he was legitimately angry, and I couldn't even say anything, man. You know what I mean? I just felt horrible about it. And luckily for me, I think most people, you know, people knew that I didn't mean that maliciously, that it was a mistake, but it didn't change the fact that obviously I was going to be on a sort of probation to make sure I didn't hurt anybody else. But I personally, just so you, for me personally, I knew from that point on, you know, I injured him so bad that I knew as a performer that I didn't have the leeway of injuring anybody else in my career from that point on. I already filled up that card with Stevie. And it makes me very proud, actually, to say, because now I've been in the business. Shoot, what are we talking about, man? Like, you know, it's 18 years, 19 years, and I never injured anybody since. And I made that promise to my, I mean, it does say people haven't gotten hurt in the ring with me, but it's never been off of anything that I've done. You know, it's either they ran and like tripped an ankle or something like that. But, and I don't know, that was just very important to me, man, because I just remember how bad I injured him, how bad it felt for me personally to do that to somebody and to do that to Stevie. Stevie's a great guy. I just saw him recently, and you know, all the way up until a few years ago, I would apologize to him every time I saw him. But like, eventually I felt like, all right, I got to give this a rest now. But yeah, it was just, I knew that I couldn't injure anybody else. If I wanted to be in this business and be successful, that card was already filled. And, you know, I had to be very careful and take care of people and just be very, very careful to do that.
Yeah. Well, you end up getting more chances because you're thrust into main event matches with the likes of Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, John Cena. You're harnessing the use of this Master Lock challenge. It seems like the package is coming together for you. What was that run like where you did get a chance to work with childhood heroes like Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair and ultimately someone like John Cena?
Oh man. Well, it was the ultimate. It was like, to me, you know, I've told people, anybody that I'll talk to, like, Shawn Michaels was my childhood idol and hero. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that guy was the greatest in-ring performer I'd ever seen. The combination of selling, athleticism, charisma, like all of it. So to me, like, there were two things that I consider the ultimate in the professional wrestling business. One, obviously, is to win the world championship. But the other one would be to work Shawn Michaels on a pay-per-view, because there was nobody I ever seen in the business who, you know, they delivered on Raw, but they delivered something completely different on a pay-per-view. They delivered you a pay-per-view caliber match that was worth paying your money out of your pocket for. And that's what I always took from Shawn above anybody. And, you know, obviously Brett, I would throw in there, like some of those guys, those were the guys for me, because I just felt like those guys were truly artists in the ring. And so, yeah, working Shawn, it was the ultimate, man. And Nate, I remember I just used to pinch myself, because, you know, people only see what we did on TV, but, you know, what you don't realize is, or people know, but we did the live events. So, I mean, I went around the world working tag matches with, teaming with Triple H against Shawn and Flair and various combinations of that. You know what I mean? It would sometimes be an Edge against Shawn and Big Show and stuff like that. And it was so much fun on those live events, because you have so much creative freedom, but it was also such a great learning experience. Cause I'll tell you one thing that I learned just standing on the apron, in those tag matches, it was the most valuable learning lesson to me to just watch the Rick, Shawn and Hunter work from the apron, because I saw their poise and how calm they were about going about their business in the ring. And it showed me that, like, a completely different way to go about the business. Because before that, I'd only worked with guys of, you know, not that level of experience, but, you know, either my level or just a little above mine. And, you know, a lot of the way we did business, because you're so young to the business, it's frantic and not forget this. And, you know, you're not really in the moment because you've got so much you're thinking about. But with them, I just saw how much they were in the moment, but more importantly, just how calm they were about everything, how they interacted and stuff like that. And to me, that was just the biggest learning lesson, because I just approached every match so different after I saw that. I knew that like, that's the way that the best do it. And it makes sense, you know, it just made sense to me. And, you know, I value some of those experiences so much as some of the greatest experiences I have.
Do you take a lot of gratification in getting the full Nelson, the Master Lock, over to the extent that you did? Because it's a submission that's been used by everyone and their mother, but there's only a select few people who got it over to the level that you did.
Yeah, you know, and I didn't even have the utmost confidence in it. Again, like I used to, when they first pitched it to me, I was like, oh my gosh, are the fans going to like this? Would I like this as a fan? Is this like too basic? You know what I mean? Because you were just so conditioned at that point that like, there was so much cool, innovative stuff happening that I was worried. I was like, man, I don't know. Like, Because I would always try to frame it through, like, I would try to put my fan hat back on and be like, would I like this? And, you know, there were some times where I wasn't sure, man. And like, but, you know, credit to Hunter, you know, we did the Master Lock Challenge, you know, we came up with the full Nelson and then we did the Master Lock Challenge. And, you know, not everybody was so confident at first, but I think it was Hunter who told him to stick it out. And we kept, you know, rolling it and pushing it on TV and doing the challenges and building it. And it ended up getting over. And, you know, the funny part is, you know, the full Nelson is actually something I used before I even entered professional wrestling. I was a bouncer for a short time. And this, funny, you know, I got signed at like 19. So we're talking, I was bouncing at like 18.
Yeah.
And that was only because I was an 18-year-old that looked like he was about 28. You know what I mean? Because I already started, you know, working out real good and getting my build. But, you know, I would use the full Nelson. You know, they wouldn't want us to hit people, obviously, if they were getting out of line. So for me, the logical thing was like, oh, well, I'm going to grab them in the full Nelson and I'm going to freaking pull them out of the club like that. And it worked every time. So it was just, you know, it was just kind of funny or ironic once I got into wrestling. That's like, oh, well, I actually legitimately used this move actually before this. So it only makes sense. And you know, the thing with the full, the whole point in bringing that move, it being the full Nelson, was at that time, and I've told this story before, so I won't go on too long, but they were trying to rein things back a little bit because they had gone so far the other way. Guys were getting hurt, jumping, you know, I think Jeff Hardy was jumping off like a 20-foot ladder or something like that. And so they really wanted to recondition the fans, but they also wanted to, hey, tell the story that, like, these holds are legitimate. You know, just because it's not the flashiest bump in the world doesn't mean, like, these holds are legit. And, you know, and then, you know, so the full Nelson, the ankle lock, you know, make submissions mean something, even if they're basic, because they do work. And, you know, it really caught on. I always remember around that time, I think YouTube just started becoming a thing. And I remember somebody showed me YouTube clips of all these kids doing the master lock.
Dude, I would sneak up on my friends and just throw them in a master lock just for the shits of it, because it was fun.
Well, bro, it was brutal because I would pull up these videos on YouTube and these kids would be doing it like 110% for real, like shaking them. Yeah. And like, I would just be like, oh my, and it was like, it was weird because I was like in awe. It's like, I can't believe I'm having this kind of influence, but I'm like, wow, I'm kind of a bad influence. Like, these kids are legitimately doing this hold and ragdolling each other. And like, some of them were brutal to watch. So I don't know. It was an interesting time.
Well, it was influential. We're talking to Chris Adonis, the NWA National Heavyweight Champion. He just had a great episode of Something to Wrestle done on him, and we're getting a little more of a deeper dive into it. We got a few more minutes here, Chris, so I want to get into kind of what happens after that main event run that you have post beginning of 2006 or so. There are the drug suspensions, the wellness suspensions, unfortunately. The topic of steroids comes up in this episode where people were in your ear always trying to take shots at your body. How difficult is it to manage some of those circumstances where, yeah, you did have the drug failures, you do have this chatter? How hard is it to navigate through that stuff?
I don't know. I don't see, when I talk about that time a lot, people are so quick to jump to the steroid thing, but like, I think a lot of what people don't understand about that time frame was there was a much bigger problem, and it was the painkillers.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yep. So like, and you know, people always point to like when I went to rehab and I came back and I was like 20 pounds lighter. And I understand that looks bad. It looks like, oh, he went to rehab for steroids and ha, now look at him. He's 250 pounds instead of 270. But honestly, that just wasn't the case. And I wish I would have had a platform to say that at the time, because you know, I was dealing with some real stuff, man. I mean, I had grown a dependence to opiates through various injuries and obviously through having unfortunate resources at that time and money. And it really kind of took over. I mean, I really kind of lost my way for a while there. And that was kind of what led to me initially having to leave and doing the rehab stint. And, you know, I just think a lot of people didn't necessarily understand that. Like, that when I came back from that, it wasn't like, oh, that I had just stop taking steroids or something. It was like, man, I've been in rehab and I've been dealing with far bigger problems than any of that, as far as like, you know, just trying to live my life without being dependent on this medication that, you know, like I didn't need necessarily, like, you know, I didn't have any horrible neck problems or anything, but like with that stuff, it becomes a dependence and you feel like you need it once you've taken it long enough. And it really kind of just takes over your life. So, I mean, really at that point, it was, for me, it was just trying to stay clean and stay off of that. And so that's kind of what posed I think the biggest difficulty from that point on, like, yeah, WWE really kind of tightened the screws on things around that time, because first we had the Eddie Guerrero incident, and then we had the unfortunate Chris Benoit incident, and that really changed the game, man. It really, but like, if you look at the business today, like the changes that happened then needed to happen, and they were slow and they were gradual kind of, but now you look at the business, and including myself, I mean, we have a business that is pretty pill free, and thank God for that, because we lost a lot of good dudes, like a lot of people, man, over the last, you know what I mean? And I don't even want to start listening, because they're just going to make this sad, but you know, it was just a difficult thing for us to go through. But yes, you know, all that stuff was a thing, you know, whether it be the pills and the steroids, you know, there was some degree of that in professional wrestling. But I think, you know, people are so quick, because they look at what wrestlers look like, they're so quick to point to the steroids and like, oh, that's an issue. And they think of the way they've been demonized, as far as you see these ultra aggressive guys just beating people up and roid raging. But man, like, pro wrestling's problem, it wasn't that, you know what I mean? It was the painkillers. It was the muscle relaxers combined with the alcohol. And that's what was signed. It's not to say that steroids can have an effect on guys. We see a lot of guys who are having heart difficulties later on in life and stuff like that. But I mean, it's just like anything else. There's good uses for that, as we're finding out today, you know what I mean? There are guys with suppressed hormones and stuff like that. So, you know, it's more about just, like I said, it was more about the getting the business clean and getting the opiates out of business and the somas.
And it's taking negatives and turning it into positives, because after you get through this, you do get released, but you get a second run, you get a nice run in Impact. You're doing awesome stuff in NWA right now. As far as I see it, Chris, this is a success story. You overcame demons, and that's not something that everybody in wrestling or in life really get a chance to say that they've done. What's your piece of advice to other people who may find themselves down in the dumps or struggling or dealing with stuff like that, and how they can help overcome that?
Well, you know, one thing I know is that, you know, just because you feel a certain way at either this given time or another given time, it doesn't mean you're going to necessarily feel that way the next day or a couple of days later, or, you know what I mean? Like, none of that really lasts. So sometimes, you know, we're so caught up in how we feel, they give a moment like, oh, I feel down, or I messed this up, or I messed that up. But, you know, like, every day is a new opportunity to either feel better or change your look. And, you know, that's just something that it's taken a lot of time. And I don't want to lie to you and say that, oh, I've had everything figured out over the last 10 years that you're talking about, and all of it's been a success story. But I think primarily, you know, it's been gradual. There's been a lot of slow growth, but, like, you know, again, most of my growth has probably happened within, it took a while, but it took within the last couple of years. And it's funny I say that, you know what I mean? Cause I always knew when I wanted to become a professional wrestler that I wanted to break in as young as possible, which is exactly what I did. But the reason I knew that is because I knew that, like, you know, I had a feeling that I wasn't going to have this, you know, clear journey. I had a feeling it was going to be a rocky journey for me. I knew I was going to make mistakes, and, you know, you look back at it and that's exactly what happened. But I think it ultimately still kind of worked out for me, because, like, breaking in that early, I knew that I would at least have the time to rectify some of those and learn from my mistakes and get back on track and hopefully make the most of my career. So I guess that would be my piece of advice. And that's touching up on kind of what you were, you know, referencing over the last 10 years.
Well, the last thing that we hear about on this podcast is Bruce is asked, you know, could you ever see another run in WWE? You're only 39 years old. That in wrestling these days, 39 is still a baby. We're seeing people who are far older getting runs on the biggest stage of them all. You're doing a great job right now in NWA. It's a great platform. But Bruce says, never say never. How do you react to something like that?
You know, it's one of those things where, and I've heard quite a few people say this, you know, like, I've heard Bruce say it. I've heard MVP say it. And I think I've even heard more, you know, like, there's a long time here where I kind of felt like, you know, I didn't think I'd ever go back there. Or I just kind of felt like that was in my rear view. You know what I mean? And it might still be, you know what I mean? There's a good chance it still is. But, you know, for me, I just have to say, for me personally, like, if I never did at least show my face there one more time, it would feel like there was unfinished business. And I'm not even just talking about it in the ring. I'm just talking about as far as relationships with people who have worked there for many years. And, you know, there's just a lot of people there that I'd like to look them in the eye and shake their hand and say a few things and tell them, you know, what, you know, all of that meant to me, you know, in terms of my early 20s and, you know, just to make amends on certain things. So, you know, like Bruce said, never say never. And, you know, I guess we'll see, but obviously I'm very happy with everything, the way everything's going and everything. And, you know, I can't predict the future. So all I can do is, you see my social media, is try to manifest my opportunities.
Well, Bruce said it, that when he had a chance to really sit down and grab a drink with you and get to know you a little more, he just thought incredibly highly of you. And I think that's awesome. And it seems like you're in a good place right now and you're doing great work. So we really appreciate it, man. You heading out with us here on adfreeshows.com and taking some time to chat. Anything else you'd like to plug to our audience here?
I just like to say thank you for having me. I'd like to thank Bruce. I'd like to thank Conrad. The show is freaking amazing and I love you guys. And man, as far as I go, Twitter at Chris Adonis, Instagram at Chris Masters 310. I'm a man of many hats, apparently. I'm Chris Wardetsky, Adonis, and Masters. So yeah, you can you know, check me out on there and see what I got going on. I'm very active on Instagram as of late. Actively campaigning, and yeah, man, so check me out there.
As long as you recognize that Matt Morgan came up with the masterpiece, it doesn't matter what you're called at the end of the day, Chris.
The blueprint, hey, and the masterpiece, that would have been a heck of a tag team.
That would have been a hell of a tag team. Never say never. I know he's in the politics game now, but you never say never. Hey, man, we really appreciate your time. Best of luck with everything, and we appreciate all you guys watching this adfreeshows.com exclusive event. Check out the episode on Chris Masters on Something to Wrestle this past week. It's great stuff. Classic Conrad and Bruce chemistry. We'll see you guys next time here on Ad Free Shows.